Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. I am Siegfried, and in this episode I want to really interrogate, well, the elephant in the room, the current COVID situation here in Canada and really around the world, because of course we're at a time when, you know, the far right is on the ascendance with this whole truck convoy Washington and all these kind of shenanigans, which are really disturbing. You know, they're very disturbing, they're very anti-science, and they're really increasing tensions within society and increasing a polarization and further confirming basically what we already know, that the West has abandoned its citizens to COVID. The capitalism has failed to contain and combat the current pandemic. Meanwhile, in the socialist countries of the world, deaths have dropped almost zero, and the infection rate is very much under control, and victories have been won. This is not the story which is often presented in the media. And so there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of misinformation, there's a lot of politicians and pundits alike are basically saying we must live with the pandemic now. We must live with COVID. We cannot overcome COVID. We cannot defeat this virus. All we can do is accept it and move forward and understand that people will die. In the UK, Boris Johnson, he's removed the mask mandate. People no longer are required to wear masks in public places. And it seems like that's the trend now in the West is, you know, there's, you know, increasing deregulation, restrictions are being lifted, you know, universities and schools are opening back up. And fundamentally, politicians just are they're just throwing in the towel. You know, this is they cannot win. Business wants the economy to reopen. It doesn't want any restrictions. It certainly doesn't want any more lockdowns. People's health is being sacrificed for the profit motive around the world. But that's not a universal truth. Because there are societies where human health is being put before the profit motive. And human lives are being saved. And the virus is being successfully combated. So I just want to read this one article. It was, you know, amazing article which emerged in, it was put out a few days ago in readpassage.com. And the title is, "The West Abandoned Its Citizens to COVID, China Saved Theirs." And I think this article is very important, especially given the amount of propaganda being directed at China right now. Frankly, racist propaganda that has been directed at China in recent years. And the subtitle of this piece is, "The Pandemic Should Remind Us Capitalism Has Failed and Prompt Canadians to Take a Different Look at China." It's by David Mastracci. And this is January 25th, 2022. I'm going to put a link to this on the blog, by the way. And it goes like this. On January 25th, 2020, Canada's first case of COVID-19 was confirmed. In the following 2 years, all levels of government in the country implemented a range of policies intended to reduce the spread of and resulting illness and death from COVID-19. At every step along the way, groups of people have opposed these policies, occasionally taking their protests to the streets. Their first manifestations were against masks and social distancing. As measures intended to blunt the worst of the pandemic came into place, protests evolved. Anti-closures, anti-lockdowns, anti-vaccines, anti-vaccine mandates. These groups held rallies, rushed businesses and public transit stations without masks, blocked vaccine clinics, and employed many other methods that earned them attention and notoriety, but also support among some. The claim of those opposing these government measures to be defending freedom for us all against a tyrannical state has been widely mocked in the media and online. They aren't portrayed as defending freedom from some unjustified power, but rather as merely complaining about reasonable measures implemented by a democratic government. They are accused of being selfish, with little care for those they put at risk. They are charged with having no idea of what the public good is and lacking any sense of community or consideration. Some in this group are genuine cranks, believing, for example, that COVID-19 is a hoax or part of a new world order. Most, however, just believe the measures ostensibly intended to curb the worst impacts of the pandemic will end up doing more harm than good. Their calculation of risk varies. Some say masks are too far, others are okay with everything up to vaccine mandates, and I don't conflate the two. And how they come to their conclusions is somewhat unclear, but ultimately it's about weighing different real, perceived, and anticipated harms against each other. And so while these groups are mocked by Western politicians, they actually share a lot in common with them. The politicians also believe, without exception, that some level of COVID-19 spread, illness, and death is acceptable if things can function relatively normally for the rest of society. The major difference between the protesters and politicians, in most cases at least, is where the point of acceptable death and illness for a return to the status quo may be. Politicians, like the protesters, also demonize those that are willing to keep anti-COVID measures in place longer. For the protesters, this includes basically every level of the Canadian government. For the political leaders, this sometimes focuses on another government in Canada, but almost always includes China and its COVID-zero strategy. Like with other attacks on China in recent years, and those employed against the Soviet Union in the past, these operate on an anti-communist logic that contrasts freedom in Western democracies with totalitarianism in socialist states. But this framing is deeply flawed. In a 1936 interview with an American reporter on the differences between the Soviet Union and the United States, Soviet leader Joseph Stalin offered some insight into the issue that remains valuable, saying, quote, "It is difficult for me to imagine what personal liberty is enjoyed by an unemployed person who goes about hungry and cannot find employment. Real liberty can exist only where exploitation has been abolished, where there is no oppression of some by others, where there is no unemployment and poverty, where a man is not haunted by the fear of being tomorrow deprived of work, of home, and of bread. Only in such a society is real and not paper, personal, and every other liberty possible." And this is a useful framework when evaluating how Canada and China have done in their pandemic response. When it comes to real liberty in this pandemic, freedom from infection, illness, and death, China has performed better, and it's not even close. To start, it's worth noting three things. The pandemic likely began in China, whereas Canada had weeks to prepare before the first case was confirmed. China has a population of around 1.4 billion. Canada has a population of around 38 million. As of January 24th, 2022, Canada had more than 2.92 million cases of COVID-19, compared with 105,600 in China. If you look at cases per 1 million people, the difference between Canada and China becomes more stark. 76,300 versus 73, respectively. And of course, this doesn't take into account the fact that official daily case numbers in Canada may be, by some estimates, up to 10 times fewer than reality, due in large part to the testing system being overloaded and authorities no longer allowing most people to get tests at all. In terms of COVID-19-linked deaths, Canada has had more than 32,500. 32,500. Whereas China has had 4,636. When the death numbers for Canada and China are crunched per 1 million people, they are 852 million people per million versus 3 per million, respectively. If you took Canada's rates of cases and deaths and applied it to China, there'd be more than 106 million and 1.2 million, respectively, in the country, making it the deadliest location of the pandemic in terms of overall death count, with the most cases. And if you flip the numbers around, applying China's rate of infection to Canada, cases and deaths in the country throughout the pandemic would be about 2,774 and 114, respectively. That's more than 32,000 lives saved. You know, if China's rate of infection for COVID was the case in Canada. But of course, Canada's infection rate is much higher than China's is. Moreover, the vast majority of China's cases and deaths came within the first 4 or so months of the pandemic. This doesn't make them acceptable, of course, but it illustrates that once China got its system in action, it was largely successful. Canada, meanwhile, suffered about the same number of deaths in 2020 and 2021, and exponentially more cases from December 2021 onward, indicating a failure to adopt measures that can successfully quell the virus, or even to learn from past waves and take preemptive measures in the relative downtimes. A significant reason for this disparity is the aforementioned COVID-zero approach China has taken. Unlike the anti-public health measure cohorts in Canada, including the country's political leaders, China has decided that no amount of cases or deaths is acceptable. In order to achieve that goal, they've implemented measures many in Canada deem to be assaults on freedom. For example, on January 10th, China locked down a city of 5.5 million people after two Omicron cases were reported. A week earlier, they locked down a city of 1.2 million people due to just three asymptomatic cases. Now, the North American media has gone to absurd lengths to attack these measures. A January 12th New York Times article is perhaps the most disturbing example. The writer, Li Yuan, describes China's approach as using, quote, iron fist authoritarian policies, and claims that Chinese intellectuals, and she doesn't name any, instead just quoting a random social media user, are citing the situation as an example of the banality of evil concept. Yuan writes, the phrase banality of evil was coined by the philosopher Hannah Arendt, who wrote that Adolf Eichmann, one of the chief architects of the Holocaust, was an ordinary man who was motivated by an extraordinary diligence in looking out for his personal advancement. Chinese intellectuals are struck by how many officials and civilians, often driven by professional ambition or obedience, are willing to be the enablers of authoritarian policies. And so you not only have, and that's end quote, by the way, and so you not only have the New York Times calling China's COVID zero policy evil, but also comparing it to one of the worst atrocities in human history, the Holocaust. They are equating people volunteering to help implement policies intended to stop illness and death to those who work towards the mass extermination of millions. Yuan portrays China's efforts as being inherently anti-human on a few occasions. She starts the article by writing, China's COVID zero policy, quote, China's COVID zero policy has a dedicated following. The millions of people who work diligently towards that goal, no matter the human costs, end quote. She later adds, quote, for the officials, virus control comes first. The people's lives, well-being, and dignity come much later, end quote. The article cites almost no data, mentions anecdotes that are hardly unique to China and limited in number, and uses broad descriptors, such as Chinese intellectuals, to smuggle the paper's biases into the piece. Setting all of that aside, though, and accepting Yuan's reporting at face value, the quote from Stalin becomes relevant again. China's COVID-19 policies have resulted in an incredibly low rate of cases and deaths. The world average for cases and deaths is about 619 and 240 times more, respectively, than China's. This likely means millions of lives saved from death or serious illness. And yet, the writer and countless more journalists, politicians, policymakers, and others she serves as a voice for say that China's approach has disregarded human costs. What potential human cost has been suffered in China that is worse than losing millions of lives? What abstract liberty would make this number of cases and deaths acceptable? Yuan writes that virus control comes, quote, before people's lives, well-being, and dignity. But what action more considerate of human life could be taken than saving it? Circling back to Canada and the US, what sense of well-being and dignity is there in hundreds of thousands of people dying, needlessly, alone, with tubes jammed down their throats, their lifeless bodies eventually carted into ice trucks? What well-being and dignity is there in elders already forced to spend their last years in a strange place, being abandoned to the ravages of COVID-19 as their loved ones watch on helplessly? And of course, the idea that Canada is free while China is authoritarian, full stop, is flawed in and of itself. Canadian governments are not taking anywhere near enough measures to stop people from dying throughout the pandemic. The fact that Canadian governments are not taking anywhere near enough measures to stop people from dying throughout the pandemic doesn't mean it's interested in freedom. Rather, it uses its power to intervene forcefully with decisions that benefit those that matter to the government. Not the people, but business interests. For example, Canada is allowing stores to remain open in order to give, yeah, is For example, is Canada allowing stores to remain open in order to give people the freedom to shop? Or is it forcing people to work in dangerous situations in order to help businesses make more profit? Have parts of Canada shortened the isolation period after testing positive for COVID-19 to 5 days instead of 10 because it doesn't want to make people stay inside? Or have these governments done it because, as they've effectively admitted, corporations need workers back sooner, no matter the danger that poses? If using the power of the state to enact policies that benefit a specific group is deemed authoritarian, then both China and Canada are guilty of the charge. The difference, of course, is that China's decisions are largely made for the public good, while Canada's are made for private capital. The pandemic is perhaps the best metric we have to judge how well governments care for their people. It has impacted every country in the world to varying degrees and given us a chance to see how they're capable of responding. It touches on everything: the healthcare system, infrastructure, manufacturing, social support, sense of community, etc. And on all these measures, Canada has performed worse than China. Not many people in the West know how well China has done, partially because once this became apparent to journalists, they stopped writing about it. Yuan's article, for example, certainly doesn't mention that the U.S. has at least 2,950 and 887 times more cases and deaths, respectively, per million people than China. If you apply U.S. rates to China, if you applied U.S. infection rates to China, there would be more than 301 million cases and 3.7 million deaths. If you applied China's rates to the U.S., there would be 24,000 cases and 897 deaths. That's more than 890,000 lives saved. I mean, seeing now that the U.S. Death toll, confirmed death toll, is now more than 900,000 as of this recording. When China's handling of the pandemic does get discussed, it's usually written off as impossible for Western states to achieve, or as we've seen, undesirable because it hasn't allowed people to stay, quote, free. While Canada certainly can't adopt a system identical to what China has, we absolutely should consider the merits of ours and our standing in the world. The pandemic should remind us that capitalism has failed and prompt us to take a different look at China, especially given the tense situation between its government and ours. This is especially true because these sorts of differences won't cease mattering when the pandemic ends. There certainly will be more climate crises ahead, pandemics, climate destruction, drought, mass refugee migrations, etc. The pandemic has further revealed what has already been apparent to some: the level of decisive action, coordination, and infrastructure needed to tackle the lethal problems we face just isn't possible with the capitalist governments in place in the West, who use the rhetoric of freedom to justify selfishness and greed at home and on the global stage. There's less difference between the cranks on the streets and our political leaders than you think. The time for demonizing the sorts of governments needed to give humanity a chance at survival is over. And that was David Mastracci, managing editor of Passage. So that was a very important article, just outlining the current situation, really putting it in perspective and cutting through the propaganda that we face. You know, and David's point that the politicians and these anti-vaxxer crowds, you know, really aren't that different from each other in terms of their approach to the pandemic. You know, that is very accurate to my mind. You know, given that neither of these groups is willing to do what it takes to actually save people's lives. at this critical time. You know, all we hear is talk about reopening, talk about, you know, we have to get the economy going again. We have, you know, it's the same chorus that we heard back in 2020, before there was even a vaccine developed. And none of them are willing. None of the powers that be are willing to compromise on the profit motive, to cut into the profits of the business class, so the capitalist class, so that more people can live. And China basically gets demonized because it is willing to save lives at the expense of profit. It is willing to put profit, well, put human life over profit, right? You know, of course, it's the exact opposite here. You know, profit comes before human life in places like Canada and the States. And the result is absolutely apocalyptic. So, and building on that, I wanted to get into another article I found, which just shows the contrast between these two systems, between socialism and capitalism. You know, socialism where human life comes first, and capitalism where it always takes second place to profit. This is an interview that was done on the Socialist China website. This would have been on the 20th. This is also on the 26th of January. And this was an interview that was done with a Chinese citizen who was in the lockdown of Xi'an, which is the city of 5.5 million people, which was locked down, as mentioned in the previous article, earlier this month, because of like a handful of cases that emerged, and there was the threat of infection spreading. So drastic action was taken to curb those infections, and, you know, so that it did not become a problem for the majority of the people in that city. So, and this, of course, is the example which is getting all this flack in the Western media and in the New York Times, saying these are authoritarian measures that are being taken, you know, basically shutting these people up in their homes, and they can't go out and stuff. And this is like, you know, going too far and all this stuff. But once again, those people are alive. Those people are alive. They're not dead. They're not risking spreading their infections to their families, to their elders, to their kids, you know. And that lockdown is gradually being rolled back now, and people are going back to their normal lives, and we don't have mass death. We don't have mass infection in Xi'an. But just the spirit of those people who are involved in that lockdown, the kind of ethos that they have, it's totally different than what we see here with the anti-vaxxer crowds and like the and all these people who want to just, I don't know, they cling to this idea of normalcy and refuse to you know, to collaborate in these measures which would save lives, right? They're against that. This and the title of this interview says it all. It says, the title is "Everyone's Happy to Do Their Part," an interview with a Xi'an resident in lockdown. And this is an interview with Xihu Li, who's a community education worker in Xi'an. And at the time of the interview, she had been locked down with his family for just over 2 weeks. And the Xi'an lockdown has since been lifted after several days in a row of no transmission, you know, of no further infection in the city. Xi's description contrasts sharply with the tales of authoritarianism published in the Western media, you know. And, you know, it talks about how thousands of community workers, you know, Xi talks about thousands of community workers working night and day to ensure that every family in Xi'an, remember, this is a city of 5.5 million people, you know, ensuring that every family had sufficient food and supplies and that people's medical needs were met. Meanwhile, multiple rounds of mass testing were carried out. The overall result is that a small outbreak in Xi'an, you know, this major city, you know, I think it's 5.5 million people in the city proper, and then there's like 13 million people in the hinterland around the city. That outbreak was prevented from getting out of control. And this interview was carried out by Eben Dombre Williams and recently appeared in Challenge. But I'm reading it off of the socialistchina.org website. So So yeah, so this is the kind of the intro to it. I'll start with that. So following a recent outbreak of 127 cases of COVID-19, Xi'an, the ancient capital of China and home of the Terracotta Warriors, has become the latest lockdown as part of China's zero COVID strategy. Despite being the most populous country on earth and the first to face the disease, China has been one of the greatest success stories in the fight against COVID, achieving not only one of the lowest death rates in the world, but sustaining sharp economic growth while many Western countries have stagnated. The global fight against the pandemic has now turned into a tale of two systems. Socialist China, which has a planned economy and is able to combine state intervention with grassroots mobilization to prioritize human need, has had only 4,639 deaths from the disease since the pandemic began, and only two deaths on the mainland throughout the whole of 2021. Hong Kong and Taiwan have different systems of government and have had 64 deaths and 843 deaths, respectively. Meanwhile, as two major centers of global capitalism and neoliberalism, the US and the UK have so far had 859,046 and 150,056 deaths apiece from the pandemic. And like I said, those figures are out of date. I mean, you know, as of the time of this recording, more than 900,000 people have died in the U.S. And most of those people have been among poor and the working class. Between them, these two countries now have over half of the active COVID cases in the world. Just those two countries. Despite these vastly different outcomes, the Western press has argued that China has been naive in approaching a zero COVID response, while other more sensible quote-unquote countries have, quote, learned to live with the disease. To prevent us from drawing lessons from China's strategy, outlets like The Economist have encouraged racist stereotypes that Chinese people are suspicious and secretive and must therefore be engaged in a nationwide conspiracy to cover up their real figures. You know, this is a major, you know, conspiracy theory that's been spread by the Western press for years now. You know, not a shred of evidence. And still others have spread fear about China's lockdowns as being overly authoritarian, like we heard in the last article. So, is this the reality on the ground? And how do ordinary Chinese people view the government's response? To find out, I spoke with Shi Hu Li, a community education worker who's been in lockdown with his family in Xi'an for just about 2 weeks. And so this is the interview. So, can you give us an overview of the situation in Xi'an? And this is what Shi Hu Li says. He says, I live on the outskirts of the city, and since the latest outbreak, Xi'an has adopted the strictest lockdown measures yet. Every major intersection now has a quarantine checkpoint to stop pedestrians walking past, and they're only allowing through essential supplies and work vehicles. To make sure that everyone has what they need to get by, tens of thousands of party officials across the city have been going into communities to meet the needs of the people. And they've received fresh fruit and vegetables every day. So far, all 13 million people in Xi'an and 2 million people in Xianyang have already received 6 rounds of testing from their homes, with the last few all performed by medical staff outside individual apartment blocks to avoid too many people gathering together at once. Testing is compulsory and no one is left out. You can compare that with Ontario right now. A few days ago, Zhong Nanshan, a leading medical professional who has guided China's COVID response and the vice premier of the state council, temporarily led the disease control and prevention work themselves, and we've just reached the turning point. That means that the lockdowns will soon be lifted for each district depending on its individual situation, and our lives and economy will soon go back to normal. Oh, and it's worth mentioning that big data in China is phenomenal. It's had a very significant... You know, compare that with big data here. It's had a very significant impact on controlling and preventing the spread of the disease. Because in China, basically, to explain that, basically apps have been used to basically, you know, track the spread of the infection and really allow the health authorities to kind of like keep a tabs on its spread and allow containment measures to take place in real time. And the next question is, who watches the quarantine checkpoints and are they managed 24 hours a day? And the response is yes. You know, volunteers and security guards watch them 24 hours a day in 3 shifts. Are you allowed to walk around your neighborhood or do you have to stay at home? And the response is, it depends. Code yellow means that you have to remain quarantined in your home. They'll put some tape on your door, and the government will bring you free vegetables. They'll give you tests from home as well. Other than that, people are free to go out into their local neighborhood for a bit of exercise. What does code yellow mean? Are there other code levels as well? There are three code levels. Code green means healthy. Code yellow means that the household hasn't received continuous testing or they're near someone with COVID. And code red means that they've either been diagnosed with COVID themselves or they've been in direct contact with someone else who's been diagnosed. You said that Xi'an has adopted the strictest measures. Do you think they're too strict? Aren't people annoyed by them? The lockdown is very strict, but no one thinks it's unnecessary. Everyone's happy to do their part and follow the prevention strategy. It's like, well, it's great that people are so on board, but let's say they weren't, and they wanted to break quarantine. What would happen if they broke the rules and left their homes? It's like, pretty much everyone is happy to follow the rules. I haven't really heard of anyone breaking them, although there were a few cases of Chinese people on TikTok from overseas who did. In minor cases, they'll just get a lecture and a slap on the wrist. But in more serious cases, they'll be temporarily restricted from leaving the country. I guess there are always going to be a few people like that. How many people do you live with, by the way? There are three of us at home at the moment. So far, we haven't left our neighborhood in 15 days. Well, you must be bored staying at home all day. How do you spend your time? It is a bit boring, but we're happy to do it if it means getting through the outbreak. At home, we watch TV, sleep, read books, cook, eat, and head downstairs to exercise. Oh, and every 48 hours, we do get to do our tests. You know, mandatory COVID testing, right? They come right to your door. And what work do you do? Are you working from home or are you on leave? And do you still get paid? I work in community education. I guess you could say I'm on leave, though not really because of the type of work I do. Other government units, like my old co-workers and friends, haven't been home for more than 10 days since the outbreak. Some are at the disease control center. Some are at the quarantine checkpoints. Some are out in the community and on the streets helping the medical professionals. And others are volunteering. I'm staying at home so as not to cause any trouble, but, you know, for my family. But no, my salary isn't affected. You know, so he's still getting money. You know, he's still getting paid. It sounds like your old colleagues are really working hard. People must really trust the government. And he says, yes, everyone has a lot of faith in the government, actually. My old comrades are working so hard right now. I also wanted to ask how people find out the latest information and guidelines. Are they sent straight to people's phones, or do you need to watch TV? Like I said before, the internet is really incredible in China, and social media is really advanced as well. There are a huge number of channels available for obtaining information. News on TV, WeChat groups, friend groups, etc. Things can be shared across the internet less than 10 minutes after they happen. You also said that the government's been sending you fruit and vegetables. Are they free? How do you get other food, medicine, etc.? Yes, the ones sent to residents in quarantine are free, but neighborhoods also have a place where we can buy food, as well as daily essentials and anything else we need. For medicine and other specific things, there's a shop phone at the entrance to the community, and they deliver straight to your door. Cigarettes, beer, drinks, beef, roast chicken. Just make the call, and it'll usually be delivered in just over 10 minutes. It's amazing. I can see how the government has helped you, but are ordinary people helping each other too? And in what ways? What role do volunteers have? Because there are so many thousands or tens of thousands of party members helping out, you know, Communist Party members helping out, ordinary people have everything they need, so people don't really need much help. That said, volunteers work to make sure that whatever does need doing gets done. For example, I have a brother volunteering in our neighborhood who often helps out the other residents by buying them fruit, beer, medicine, things like that. Okay, the last questions are about the Western media's response to China's fight against COVID. Some papers in Britain have been saying that China's reported figures, like its death rate, are false, and that they're actually much higher. What's your opinion on this? I don't really want to say too much about this. If someone has the wrong ideology, then everything they say is going to be either biased or a lie. And you should know very well who owns the Western media and whose interests it serves. China is the only country with a 5,000-year history, and the last of the four ancient civilizations still in existence. So, of course, we have ideological differences with the West. As for the figures, no one in the party or the government would dare try to hide them. If they did, they'd lose their jobs. Take China's strong testing and mobilization capacity, for example. Since the start of the pandemic, how many masks, protective clothes, respirators, medical gloves, and all the rest has China provided to the world? If the rate of infection was higher, how could all of this be manufactured? That's just one piece of evidence. Other papers have said that China's policies are too strict and that they infringe upon human rights. How would you respond to that? They say that the numbers are too low while also saying that the controls are too strict. Isn't that a contradiction? Controls in China are strict, but the people understand and accept them. Chinese people don't think that having to stay inside is an infringement on their human rights, although there are a few isolated examples of extremely mechanical thinking. For example, a few days ago, there was a pregnant woman in Xi'an who miscarried because she wasn't allowed to enter the hospital for more than 48 hours since her last COVID test, which led to a public outcry. It was a private hospital, and people voted with their feet, and their stock value dropped by billions in just 2 days. That said, the party is very good at correcting its mistakes. That night, various places issued demands for special measures to be taken in special situations, and special outpatient wards were set up. None of this, in my opinion, is just a statement of fact, and several leading government officials in the province have already been dismissed for failing to adequately respond to the pandemic. So that's the conclusion of that interview with Shihu Li, you know, community education worker in Xi'an who was part of the recent lockdown of that city in China, and who was describing the conditions being dealt with there, and the approach that the Chinese government, the local officials in Xi'an were taking to contain that outbreak and ensure that no one died, that the disease did not spread, and that people could go back to normal as soon as possible. And now Xi'an is returning to normal. That lockdown is in the process of being lifted, and people are going back to their daily lives. But I mean, just notice the kind of things that Shihu Li was describing in that interview. How Communist Party officials were intimately involved in assisting the public at every level. You know, they were bringing fruit and vegetables to people's doors. You know, they were helping to organize the drop off of essential supplies. You know, they were involved in testing, making sure that things were livable for people, even in the midst of like lockdowns and things like this. They made sure people had what they needed. They were getting the information and the updates that they needed, and that no one was getting left out. Everyone was getting tested. Basically the situation was in different neighborhoods was being overseen on a case-by-case basis. So neighborhoods that were okay, there weren't any infections, those were being like the lockdown was being lifted there. And it was only those neighborhoods that did have infections that were kept in lockdown for longer. It was very targeted. You know, they were getting a grip on things. They saw where the cases were. They were doing testing to make sure that they got a grip on that. They did targeted lockdowns to make sure those cases didn't spread, those infections didn't spread, and it was all being done in a very scientific, very organized sort of way that made sure that everybody was looked after, people didn't die, and that things could go back to normal as soon as possible. That's not what we're seeing here in Canada. You know, and that's not what we're seeing with Doug Ford and Justin Trudeau and really all the premiers across the country. It's not what we're seeing from Joe Biden or Boris Johnson or any of these kind of, you know, these self-proclaimed champions of freedom in the West. You know, they aren't imposing lockdowns. They aren't imposing any special measures. They're basically just saying, yeah, just get your shot and then you're on your own. Right? That's not enough. That's not enough. If that's the only response, then the virus will continue to spread. It's gone crazy with the recent Omicron virus. There's lots of people I know who have gotten that virus. And it's just, it's really hitting home more so for me than it really ever has since the pandemic began. You know, now it's much more widespread. It's much more in your face. It's much more affecting your daily life than ever before. And yet, no lockdowns, no special measures, not even any mass testing, no required testing of that people have to go through. Nothing. You know, they're not even trying to contain this. They're not even trying to find out who has it and trying to contain the spread. They're not even doing that. They're saying, they're telling people to go back to work. They're putting all their faith in, you know, in the vaccine or in just like newfangled masks, which aren't even reaching everybody. You know, these N95s. You know, just get that and everything's going to be fine. Just get your vaccine and everything's going to be fine. Not enough. Not enough. And then, of course, you know, they're not really doing anything to stop or really counteract the these anti-vaxxers when it comes right down to it. You know, they're not really educating the public effectively. They're not really doing anything to assure the public. And they're just really, you know, knocking the... just tanking their own, you know, their own trustworthiness is just going down. Like, people just are not believing them. Because it's like they're not even really trying to save lives anymore. So it's really disheartening to see this. And also, like, you know, like, I know I'm going to get flack for this. If I post this, there's even people on my group, even people who describe themselves as leftists, who will criticize me for being too soft on China or, you know, praising an authoritarian system that isn't really socialist or something like that. Just because I'm saying that they're doing something right over there. You know, that they're engaging in correct measures to combat this pandemic and saving lives and things like that. That's too much for certain people to hear, even on the left. They can't deal with it. And so they bury their heads in the sand and just despair. Meanwhile, I think what this should do is just, this is a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call. And it's not just China. You also have examples in Vietnam, Cuba. Cuba, which has developed at least 5 vaccines of its own, despite being under, you know, the U.S., continuing to be under the U.S. blockade, the illegal U.S. blockade, which has gone on for decades and really choked that economy. They also are putting people first. They're also developing effective means of combating the virus and its spread. And frankly, their vaccines undergo one hell of a lot more testing than Pfizer or Moderna does. You know, and that's come out recently in figures that those initial tests, which were done when those vaccines were rushed into production at the end of 2020, largely for political reasons, it was a very woefully undersized test. There was a lot of factors they left out, and overall, it was just a very irresponsible, you know, testing process that those vaccines went through. That's not the case for like Cuban vaccines or like virtually all these other vaccines which are being produced in like places like China and all these stuff. They're going through multiple rounds of testing. They're being tested on a vast scale. Any issues that emerge is being effectively looked at and dealt with, and the vaccines are getting get recalled and updated. So they actually have a clear picture of how effective they are, how long-lasting they are, and just overall, they're much more trustworthy in terms of like the coverage and the defense that they give against the virus. So overall, we're seeing how much socialism is superior to capitalism, how socialism defends human life and puts human life first. Meanwhile, capitalism does nothing of the kind. Capitalism is perfectly willing to throw you to the wolves so long as profits continue to increase and business owners get their, you know, get their returns. You know, things are normal for them, right? They don't care if, like, you know, things are not normal for the working class and working class people are dying and getting infected and their lives are getting upended so long as they keep making money. You know, that's real. That's the bottom line. It is the bottom line, you know, in these societies. And we're seeing that just blatantly in your face, shoved in your face every day. And I said a lot of the same things when I did a similar episode of the show last year. You know, I did a whole like COVID update show at the beginning of 2021. I think it was January 2021. And it's just, I'm saying a lot of the same things here, but it's just, it's more, even more and more confirmed now. You know, more and more examples. And it's just undeniable. If you look at the facts, you look at the information, you look at the actual data, not just, not the myths, not the propaganda. You look at the actual information, you seek truth from facts, and you will see the picture. You will see the real picture, the real, what's really going on. And we're at a time when we really have to look through the media. We have to look through that, we have to cut through that propaganda. We have to cut through that, all the stuff in the press, which demonizes China, demonizes really all socialist countries. And really see where the victories they're winning. And ask the question, why not here? Why not here? Why are lives not being saved here? Why are those measures not being taken here? Why is human life not being put first in Canada? You know, we should be asking all our officials that. We should ask every level of government that. Why are you not saving lives? Why are you not taking these effective measures? Why are you insisting on going back to normal and just treating it like it's, you know, just something we got to live with? You know, why? Why? You know, ask that question. Do not be afraid to ask that question. Never stop asking questions. Because this is not the way. The way we're doing it here, this is not the way. This is not the way to save lives. And we got to learn. We got to learn. We got to wake up and we got to understand that we got to change. We have to change. Society needs to change radically. If we're going to have a livable future. If we're going to have a livable future here. And this not only applies to like the pandemic. This applies to climate change. This applies to just, you know, the working class in general, working class oppressed people, indigenous people, all those people are fighting for their lives right now. You know, this applies to all of us, you know, who have to carry the burden that the capitalist class is putting on our shoulders, disproportionately on some more than others. Obviously, if you're like racialized, if you're, you know, oppressed, you're going to be carrying more of it. But you know, like we all have to like, we have to combine forces. You have to join together. And we have to understand what's really going on, what we need to fight for. And understand who the real enemy is here. So, anyways, that's pretty much what I got to say here today. So thank you very much for listening. And I'm really going to try to keep it regular now. Going forward here on Back in the USSR, putting out regular episodes. And please stay tuned, you know, because this, you know, it's really, really important that we keep this going, we keep this conversation going, we keep this dialogue going, we keep educating ourselves, mobilizing, and opposing those forces which are trying to basically kill us right now. You know, that includes the politicians, that includes these far right idiots, anti-vaxxers, that includes those idiots, that includes the politicians, that includes the corporations and the capitalist class who just want to rake in the profits at the expense of human life. You know, we as working class and oppressed people have to take a stand right now. But first we got to know what's going on. First we got to educate ourselves. And then we got to act, we got to mobilize. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR, brothers and sisters. I'll see you all, you know, comrades and friends. I'll see you all here next week. Solidarity.
You keep him in my head and you keep him on the down. And you don't serve the people. Keep it up.